I would like to take a moment and talk about something very near and dear to my heart. It's coffee. Sometimes at night, I think about the countdown to coffee time. This may sound strange, but this is me just being real. Starting my day with coffee always provides the uplifting mood I desire to tackle whatever is ahead. But honestly, sometimes with the increased energy and focus, it can be accompanied with a bit of jitters. I could, in theory, drink less, but come on now, let's not get carried away. Thankfully, there's Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. Everyday Dose combines coffee with collagen, natural nootropics, and theanine to help smooth everything out for you. Get the boost you need to accomplish your New Year's resolutions. Lion's Mane helps with natural focus, while L-theanine keeps the stress at bay. Everyday Dose is the perfect boost you need to accomplish your New Year. Right now, get 61% off your first Coffee Plus starter kit, free peppermint mocha creamer plus, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/mindful or use code MINDFUL at checkout. Chronological age represents your birthday, but your biological age is really how old your body is. Biological age is the strongest predictor of disease risk and mortality. I think this is great news because we can turn the dials of lifestyle and heavily influence our health outcomes. TrueAge offers an easy at-home test kit to provide you with everything you need to know about your biological age and what steps you can take to optimize for your health goals. I've taken the test twice now and it couldn't be more convenient, and the information it delivers is first rate. You can order online and the kit ships right to your door. It's a quick, simple finger prick at home, then drop it in the prepaid return package. Your only job? Follow the 3 recommendations for 90 days, then retest to see progress. It uses advanced epigenetic testing to analyze over 1 million biomarkers. TrueAge identifies the 3 most important actions you can take over 90 days to improve your health. It's trusted by longevity clinics and health professionals, not just consumers at home. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off at TrueDiagnostic.com using code MINDFUL20 at checkout. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use code MINDFUL20 for 20% off today. Choose TrueAge, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or subscription.
Because high blood sugar, it causes inflammation inside the arteries, right? And it's basically, think of it like broken glass inside of your arteries, almost like sandpaper on the side of your face. And so it causes these micro tears on the inside of the walls of your arteries. And when your body sees that, your body sends cholesterol into the bloodstream to try and patch up those micro tears. It's like just spackling a wall that's got like holes in it. And so that's where now the plaquing starts to happen and the opening of the artery starts to shrink. And that's what causes the high blood pressure. So that's why that happens. So when you start eating the right foods, blood sugar starts coming down. Now your body reverses that process.
Dr. Jeffrey Hawkins, thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
Yeah, nice to be here.
So you're the CEO of the Diabetes Reversal Group?
Yes, sir.
So that implies diabetes can be reversed?
Yes, sir.
I want to know more.
Yeah, so we've got our claim to fame is we've got the only patented system in the world that actually reverses type 2 diabetes. And it's done by obviously eating the right foods. We provide our proprietary nutritional supplements, exercise recommendations, recipes, ongoing support, and coaching to hold patients accountable. And when they follow our program, their blood sugar gradually starts reducing, and then their primary physician is able to gradually wean them off of all their diabetic medications. That includes insulin, that includes Ozempic, any GLP-1s, like everything goes away. And that's what we do. And it's been very exciting the last 16 years to help thousands of lives.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I have a lot of questions about that. What led you to want to work on this specifically, though?
Yeah, I had an aunt who died of diabetes complications, and my wife's dad passed away from diabetes complications, too. So it runs in the family. And it's such a very, very nasty disease. We saw it happen, you know, firsthand with our family members. And we looked around 16 years ago and thought, wow, there's no place that somebody could join that shows people exactly what to eat and not eat as a diabetic to help it, what supplements to take, what exercise to do, and provide coaching and training, plus guarantee results like we do. So we created it. And it's been a 16-year journey, but it's a personal mission to us because it runs in the family.
It's interesting. When you say runs in the family, some people would say, well, that means it's genetic and it's not reversible because it's in your genes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. When I say runs in the family means we have people in our family that have it, but there's no gene that's been identified that says, boom, you're going to get type 2 diabetes. Now, there are genetic predispositions, which is different than having a gene that says you're, you know, destined to get this no matter what you do. So the great news is because there's no gene that says you're going to get it, that means it is reversible regardless of how many people in your family have it. But the majority of our patients, over 80% of our patients, they're the first ones in their family to have diabetes. So,
and I mean, this might sound, I don't know, like low level, but how are you defining diabetes?
Yeah, so diabetes is, again, it's based on the blood sugar and the A1C level. So when someone's A1C on their labs, which is their hemoglobin A1C, when it's 6.5 or higher, they're diagnosed as a type 2 diabetic. So what our program does is we get people to have their A1C be 5.9 or lower, taking no diabetic meds. That's what we classify as reversal, because between 6 and 6.4 is prediabetes. So even though under 6.5 is good, we want to get it under 6 to really make sure someone's reversed this disease. So that's what we do. That's the parameters, and that's the bar that we've set for ourselves to get people to. And it's pretty exciting when that happens.
What is that actually a reflection of? I mean, what you're talking about is essentially the A1C, I'm not an expert on this, but is essentially like the average over a few months, the recent few months of what your blood sugar is?
Correct, yeah. So regular blood sugar, you want it to be like 105, you know, 110 or lower. You know, between 80 and about 105, 110 is normal, the blood sugar level. But the A1C reading is an average of the last 3 months of your blood sugar. And that number should be 5.9 or lower. So that's really the gold standard is someone's A1C.
So it seems like such a fine line. I mean, from what I understand, your blood, which I don't know how much volume of blood we have, but it's like a lot. Like there's a lot of blood. And the normal level of sugar in it is like a teaspoon, essentially, about?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to measure that. People, that's really the, if you try and explain it that way, that's kind of hard for them. That's why we go by a percentage. So if you really want to get technical, I can, on what the hemoglobin A1C is. But that's why they do it over a three-month average, because someone can eat something today, it's not going to affect their A1C. Right, so you had like a bad meal, some sugar, whatever. Yeah, your blood sugar is going to spike, but your A1C is not really going to be affected because it's a three-month average.
Gotcha.
So that's why, you know, they don't really diagnose somebody just on their blood sugar level, because that can go up and down based on having fruit or whatever, or just had a donut and you're never going to have a donut again for the next 3 months.
Gotcha.
But your A1C is that gold standard. So that's why you got to get that below that 5.9, like 5.9 or lower, and you're good to go.
And they use the 3 months because of the typical lifespan of a like cell in the blood or something.
Is that correct? So yeah, if you want me, I'll go down the rabbit hole.
I mean, I'm here to try to learn. I want to hear fix it, but I also feel a little lost on what it actually is mechanically, metabolically. And I've heard different opinions of what it is and what causes it.
So here's what it is. Okay, so the hemoglobin A1C. Right, when I say that 5.9, that's a percentage number. And so in your blood, right, there's red blood cells. And part of the red blood cells is hemoglobin. And hemoglobin, oxygen attaches to the hemoglobin in your red blood cells. And that's what takes oxygen all around your body. Okay? So what happens when the blood sugar comes in, it kicks out the oxygen and it hitches a ride on that hemoglobin. Right? So now your oxygen level is lower. And so that's why it's got to be below that 5.9. So 5.9 percentage of your hemoglobin is carrying glucose versus oxygen. And if it's under that 6.0, that 6%, that's good. It starts getting too high. Now there's way too much sugar instead of oxygen. And so it causes a lot of problems in your body. Inflammation, it can cause neuropathy in the feet and issues with the eyes and kidney and everything else. So that's what the hemoglobin A1C reading is. It's a percentage of your hemoglobin that's carrying glucose instead of oxygen. And so you want it to be 5.9 or lower. And so that's the threshold.
Okay. So getting back to what I was asking a moment ago, it seems like such a fine line. Like 5 grams of sugar in all this blood is like normal, give or take, but 6 grams and you're diabetic. And it's like we eat a meal that could have 50, 60, 70 grams of sugar in it that gets titrated in through our digestive. Like, what differentiates someone being able to keep it in that healthy level and being just a little, and just having like 1 more gram floating around?
Yeah, but again, it's not based on grams, right? So it's a percentage, right? So just because we're saying 6% is kind of that threshold, whether you're pre-diabetic or good, that doesn't mean it's 6 grams worth of sugar. That's just the percentage of the hemoglobin that's carrying oxygen. So everyone's body's different. For someone, it might take 20 grams of sugar in that bloodstream all the time to get it above 6, right? Other people might take 5 or might take 10. So that's why, again, you're just measuring it based on the hemoglobin A1C. Now, obviously, the more amount of sugar you eat, right, it's going to start affecting that because now your body becomes insulin resistant. And now the sugar's not getting taken out of your cells to be used as energy. It hangs around the bloodstream. And so now the glucose has a much higher chance of, you know, kicking out that oxygen and attaching onto the hemoglobin. So that's why, again, you can't have insulin resistance because insulin, right, the job of insulin that's released from the pancreas, that's supposed to take the sugar out of the bloodstream into the cell to be used as fuel and energy. And if your body now is insulin resistant, well, guess what? Now that blood sugar is staying high, and that has a lot more chance of kicking out that, you know, oxygen and replacing it with the actual sugar. So that's what happens. Then again, that's why the typical diabetic, you don't get type 2 diabetes until you're in your late 40s, early 50s usually, because it can take 20, 30, 40 years of that happening before you finally, your body gets insulin resistant, and then the insulin can't take the sugar out.
So what do you think causes, do you think it's essentially the same cause for people? Or
like, yeah, what do you, I mean, for 95 or more percent of type 2 diabetics, it's adult onset and is due to what you've been eating for the last 2, 3, 4 decades of your life, plus lack of exercise, right, being very sedentary. So that allows your blood sugar to stay high for a long time, right, because your pancreas, it keeps shooting out insulin to try and get rid of all that sugar, that bad food you're eating. And eventually your body becomes resistant to its own insulin. So it's like an autoimmune disease in a sense, right? So it's not, your pancreas is still producing plenty of insulin, but your body's not utilizing the insulin to take the sugar up because it perceives it as foreign. And that's why our program, when you start eating the right foods, taking the supplements, doing exercise, it reverses the insulin resistance. It makes your body receptive again and sensitive to your own insulin, and that way you don't need the medications anymore. So that's why it's a process. But again, because it's not genetic, it's good news because you reverse that process, your body heals.
So I have questions because a couple things. So do you feel like it's, so you said there's two things really driving it. It's the intake of sugar and the lack of exercise?
Correct.
I mean, I feel like So let's start with exercise first. So exercise helps because it's allowing the sugar to get into cells more easily?
No, the exercise, it's like, you know, driving 80 miles an hour versus 10 miles an hour, right? You're going to use more gas in your car, right? So it's like when the more you exercise, the more your body needs that glucose as fuel to sustain the exercise. And so that's why the more you exercise within limits, and I'll explain that in a second, right, your body utilizes that sugar. So that's one of the things that keeps the blood sugar down, is by doing moderate exercise on a regular basis throughout the week. But then again, it's also, you got to stop eating the things that produce glucose in your body. So it's not just, you know, the sugar like candy and everything else. It's dairy products have lactose in it, a lot of sugar, right? Obviously the bad carbs, so the breads, the pasta, the rice, the cereals, the pizza, all that stuff creates glucose in your body. So those are the things you want to eliminate, and do that on top of the exercise. All of a sudden, boom, blood sugar starts coming down. So it's not just a temporary thing. You got to do it on a regular basis. And because we're so sedentary now, our lifestyle, everyone's doing this. They're on their phones, on their computers, watching TV, sitting on their butts 18 hours a day. It wasn't like that 20 years ago. You know, like most people are more active. Now we lead a very, very sedentary lifestyle, which is another reason why the boom of diabetes is skyrocketing right now.
Mechanically, there's people that eat a lot of sugar, that don't have diabetes. And I guess I'm trying to understand, I mean, what it seems like at the heart of it is more like a dysregulation of utilizing the sugar. So the sugar stays in circulation because it's not being utilized.
Right. And again, that's where the insulin resistance comes in, right? Because if your body's functioning properly, biomechanically and physiologically, right, when you eat the sugar, your pancreas releases insulin. The insulin grabs the sugar, takes it out of the bloodstream into your cells to be used as energy. That's what's supposed to happen. But when you keep eating that, your body stops doing that. So again, it's different for everybody, right?
That's where I get hung up. So
yeah,
like again, in every other system, like if you exercise, it's like there's this use it or lose it thing in the body.
Mm-hmm.
But with this, you're saying that as you use it, you lose it. As you try to utilize sugar as energy as it comes in, you're getting worse at it.
No, you're not getting worse at it. It's just when you overwhelm the body with so much sugar, 24/7, 20, 30 years, that's what happens. Your body just says, hey, this is something's weird here. There's way too much sugar, way too much insulin coming in, and that's when it flips the switch, and now your body becomes insulin resistant. You know, some people, it doesn't happen. You know, everyone's body's different, right? You know, based on there's a lot of other factors in that, but my point is, when you do this and you say, well, a lot of people eat a lot of sugar, they don't become diabetic. Okay, well, what's their age? You got to tell me more information. Are they 30 years old eating a lot of sugar, not diabetic? Or are they 75 years old eating a lot of sugar for 40 years and not a diabetic, right? If someone's eating a lot of sugar for 30, 40 years, it's eventually going to catch up with them, right? It's very rare that someone eats a lot of sugar, doesn't exercise a lot, they get into their late 60s and 70s that don't develop diabetes. Right. I mean, that's again, there's always the George Burns of the world that can smoke right. And drink and cigars, live to be 100 years old. Right.
Well, I know a guy person, like that. And he eats a lot of sugar and he's 86 and he's doing really well. But he is not sedentary. I wonder, I'm not sure it's the sugar in the diet that's driving it. I mean,
100% is. It is.
So my sugar intake, for instance, I used to be really like anti-sugar. Mm-hmm. Like I would vilify sugar. And then as I learned more about some of the benefits of using carbohydrates for fuel relative to other things, I try to be open-minded and try to have more carbohydrates. And now I've like the highest carbohydrate intake of my adult life by a lot. And I have the lowest blood sugar, fasting blood sugar readings that I've had. Like sometimes I get a little worried. Like my last one was like 71 and I worry that might be too low. And I had a client that I worked with. I have a gym, so I work in a gym environment. And mm-hmm. She was an older woman, and she had diabetes. And this was back when I really thought carbs were the main problem. And I told her to lower carbs. And it worked. Like, it got her blood sugar down initially. I don't know what it did long term. I didn't work with her long term. But my question is, did that really fix the issue of not utilizing sugar well? Because I feel like the sugar is high because it's not being used. Like mm-hmm. I've seen people that are, when you fast, your blood sugar will eventually go up. Or if you have a stress, you can have a stress and it'll elevate blood sugar without any like food intake.
Yeah, so you're getting into multiple areas, right? You can definitely have stress and that affects your adrenal glands, which will produce cortisol and raise your blood sugar. That's the fight or flight. So your body releases that to try and stay alive because they feel like you're going to be running or escaping some kind of danger, and your muscles need the sugar, the fuel, to actually function. So that's why they do that.
So how do we know that that's not what's going on? Like, how do you know? Because everybody's stressed, like almost everybody I know. Like, how do we know when someone's blood sugar is high, it's not just driven by stress? Because there's a world of bodybuilders that have 50% of their calories come in from carbohydrate, oftentimes very simple carbohydrates, and they're not diabetic. Is that just because they out-exercise?
They're utilizing it, man. Yeah. I mean, it's like professional. Look at the diet of a typical NFL football player. You know, those guys stop playing football. They balloon up to like 300 pounds when they were 220, you know, when they're playing football because they're not burning off 10,000, 12,000 calories a day anymore. You know, so that's where that comes in. But let's just talk about the average American, right? That's not a professional athlete, professional bodybuilder, right? Because that's a very small percentage of the population. The average person, right, that doesn't know anything about healthcare, right, when they're eating the bad carb. And I want to classify, there's bad carbs and good carbs. Okay, the good carbs are fruits and vegetables. Okay, a lot of carbs in those, and there's glucose in those, right? So I'm not saying that our program's a glucose and sugar elimination program, right? It's getting rid of the stuff that tends to trigger the insulin resistance and causes other issues in the body. And that's where the dairy products and the bad carb, which are all the grains, they're at the breads, pastas, etc., those got to go away. And when that goes away and you sustain that, you're still getting carbs in your diet because your body needs glucose to survive, but it's not overwhelming it with like dairy, grains, sugar, vegetables, fruits, and desserts and soda. And like, you know, all of a sudden your body's like, what the fuck's going on, right? It's like, right, it's way too much. So that's why you have to pick and choose what are the best sources that your body utilizes the best for the average person. And that's fruits and vegetables for their carbs. The average person who's not exercising, burning off a couple of thousand calories a day in the gym, working out, they can't eat the grains and the pastas and the rices where a bodybuilder can, right? And like a triathlete can and a cyclist can't. Like, so again, we got to separate the average person from the athlete. Because that's two separate kettles of fish, man, 100%. So what we deal with when our practice, right, our program is, again, 95% of people that join our program, they're not athletes.
They're sick.
Right? They're literally sitting on their butts 18 hours a day like a normal person, right? They exercise. I mean, they walk a few days a week. That's about it. They don't go to the gym. You know, that's it. Their exercise is getting up and down and going to the fridge, right, and going to the bedroom. That's really much their exercise. And that's the person that develops that insulin resistance, and that is reversible. Like, athletes are a whole different kettle of fish, man, because it can be because of the stress, et cetera. And you're right. Everybody's got stress, right? But so what do? If you can't eliminate the stress from someone's life, what else do you do to help bring that blood sugar down? That's where eliminating certain foods, taking the right supplements, that's what gets that handled. So,
okay. Yeah. You said the body does need glucose. Do you know how much it does need, like the average person?
I don't have the math on that, man, as far as the chemistry.
When you guys give, like, food plans, are there, like, is it like, these are the good foods, these are not, or are there, like, specific macro things that you're trying to hit, like, relationship?
Yeah, again, we give our patients an enjoy avoid list. Gotcha. Hey, here's the food you can enjoy, here's the ones to avoid. Okay, so we don't get so crazy, because, again, if a program's too complicated, someone's not going to do it.
Right.
So you got to measure your food and this much this and only this much calories and make sure it's only 62 grams of carbs per day for your body weight. It's like they're like, ah, it's like it just like their eyes glaze over, right? So you want to make it very simple. We give them over 240 recipes to choose from. And in those recipes, it has kind of the meat and the vegetables with it, a little bit of fruit. Always have fruit with some protein to kind of balance out the sugar you'll get from that. So those are the things we tell people. But as far as them getting really anal about it with measuring, because you could be a 100-pound person, a 200-pound person. Like, it's just, it gets too complicated, and the compliance rate goes down.
Gotcha.
So you try and make this simple. As long as you're eating from this list of foods, and here's the 240 recipes to pick from, you're fine. Now, when we're coaching somebody, if we see their blood sugar flatlining for a couple of weeks, then we do a deeper dive. So I say, hey, okay, what's going on? Tell me what you're eating. Show me your food log. And we can see if they're overbalanced in one area or not. But the cool thing about our program is that what we have it set up is literally 85-90% of people, when they follow it as directed, they get better. There might be 5% that we got to tweak a little bit because of certain things. There might be a truck driver who, they work during like midnight to 8 in the morning. So that kind of messes up their cycle and the little things like that. Someone who's had a kidney transplant or, those kind of things. So we have to kind of tweak it for that. But luckily, the majority of people are just regular people. They don't have anything weird going on that we have to do much to. And just here's the enjoy avoid list. Here's the supplements. Do a little bit of exercise. Check in with us once a week. And it keeps them going really well, holds them accountable. Blood sugar comes down, and their doc's able to get them off the meds. And that's the cool thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, you must have a lot of confidence in it, because I saw on your site that you offer a refund plus like $1,000. That was interesting to see.
Yes.
That's not something you usually see anywhere.
No, you don't.
It's very unique to see this. So if somebody does the plan and it doesn't work, you give them their money back.
Yeah, yeah. So again, it's a better, we call it our better than 100% money back guarantee. So as long as they follow it as directed, if they're not reversed by the end of their program, they get a 100% refund plus $1,000 for trying it. Now, for them to qualify for the guarantee, they obviously have to jump through some hoops for us, right? Because they're not living with us, not locking them in a room for 6 months. So, you know, so we know what they're eating. We have to, like, how do you maximize compliance, right? So they have to check in with their support coach at least once a week, okay, letting us know the blood sugar, their blood pressure, and their weight, so we can track that. And they have to send in a daily food log once a week as well, so we know what they're eating. And of course, on the food log, it can't say Häagen-Dazs ice cream and Domino's pizza, right? It's got to be only the approved foods on the food log. So as long as they do that and they're not reversed, that's when they get their refund. And so, yeah, so that's how we hold them accountable to making sure they do it, because they have to do that on a regular basis so that we see what's happening.
Gotcha. So, you mentioned supplements, so that's part of the plan. Are there particular supplements that are used regularly that you find that are helpful?
Yeah, I mean, there are supplements. Like, we have our own proprietary supplements. It comes in a pack like this. And so they're made at the manufacturer that we have a partnership with. And so we don't sell them on Amazon. They're not sold in stores. You can't buy them anywhere except from us. That's part of our patent. So there's 87 different nutrients in our supplements. It's not just a little bottle with chromium and cinnamon and a couple things like that. It's very, very robust. And it's designed to help support the areas that are damaged by the high blood sugar. So brain, liver, kidneys, pancreas, spleen, heart, digestion, like all of that. So that's what the supplements are for. And it really helps the person get better. So again, that's the secret sauce. That's what we got patented, was that specific list of foods you can eat and not eat, and the ingredients and dosages of our supplements. Gotcha. So that's what's proprietary to us that nobody else has.
So are those, like, I'm curious about supplements. Like, are these vitamins and minerals that are like
cofactors for energy? Yeah, it's all whole food vitamins, nothing synthetic. There's chelated minerals, and we have digestive enzymes, you know, all the A through E vitamins, you know, coenzyme Q10, probiotics, essential fatty acids, so all that. So it's all that's in there. And again, it took us about 6 years of tweaking and testing and research to kind of figure out, like, what do we want to put in this formulation? And we went to our manufacturer and said, okay, here's the list of things we want in there. You know, and so they created it for us. And that was really the thing that kind of kicked us over the top and got us patent approval. Because if we just gave them a list of foods you eat and not eat, we couldn't get that patented. It's not unique enough for the patent office. But the supplements, the dosages, the ingredients, yeah, that's definitely specific to what we're doing.
But that's all secret. Do people see what the ingredients are?
It's on there. You can go on our the U.S. patent office. We have the list exactly what the dosages and ingredients are. It's right there in the patent. So that's public information.
Gotcha.
But yeah, anybody who tries to duplicate it then is patent infringement. So that's where that comes in. So we're protected.
So what's the program like? You mentioned a weekly support group. So how does it all work logistically when somebody
First of all, they get into the program, we offer free webinars. Like, we'll give the website out at the end where people can just go to one of our free webinars. That explains the program. At the end of the webinar, they have a chance of booking a consultation with one of our consultants. That's a one-on-one consultation done over Zoom, and that's where we customize a program for that patient based on their severity. Right, so it's either a 3-month, a 5-month, or a 7-month program we offer based on the severity of their diabetes. So think of it like a mild, moderate, or severe case. Okay, so the average one is the 5-month plan. So when someone enrolls, they get passed off to their support coach. They do an hour-long onboarding where we send them, here's a list of foods you can eat and not eat. We mail them the supplements they have to take. And then they actually have to start reporting to their support coach at least once a week. But they have unlimited access to their coach 5 days a week, any questions that come up. And so once they get the information, it's literally as simple as eat the way we tell you, take the supplements, right? Do a little bit of exercise we recommend, and then check in with your coach at least once a week. So it's really not that hard. And once the blood sugar starts coming down, once it gets down to about 105 in the morning, the fasting reading, then the support coach tells the patient, hey, it's time to call your primary physician so they can adjust the dosage of your meds because your sugar is getting a little bit too low. And so then they just call their doctor on the phone. They don't even need to go into the office for a visit. Hey, doc, my blood sugar is like 103 this morning. What should I do? And then the doctor says, hey, you know, cut your metformin in half. You know, so they'll adjust the dosage over the phone. And that's how the process works. And so they keep doing that all the way through the program, and it's a gradual weaning process of the medications. Like, they don't stop them cold turkey. They gradually go lower and lower as their blood sugar starts dropping. And the cool thing is that most diabetics also have cardiovascular issues. So most of them are on blood pressure and cholesterol pills too. So that's the cool thing, the other benefit. When their blood sugar starts coming down, so does the blood pressure and so does the cholesterol. So most of our patients, their doctors are able to take them off of all the diabetic meds, blood pressure, cholesterol, all that goes away.
Why do you think the cholesterol improves when the blood sugar gets better?
Yeah, well, cholesterol increases because of the diabetes. Because high blood sugar, it basically causes inflammation inside the arteries, right? And it's basically, think of it like broken glass inside of your arteries, almost like sandpaper on the side of your face. And so it causes micro tears on the inside of the walls of your arteries. And when your body sees that, your body sends cholesterol into the bloodstream to try and patch up those micro tears. It's like just spackling a wall that's got like holes in it. And so that's where now the plaquing starts to happen and the opening of the artery starts to shrink. And that's what causes the high blood pressure. So that's why that happens. So when you start eating the right foods, right, blood sugar starts coming down. Now your body reverses that process. Okay, no more cholesterol going in to spackle the micro tears. No more micro tearing happening. And that's how it reverses the process. The opening gets bigger. Blood pressure goes down. And so that's what we see happening physiologically
so
with people with diabetes.
So you see the heart disease itself going down, like the actual plaque levels going down. Have you done like scans for that, like before and after stuff?
Some patients do that, but we don't do. We just base it now on the cholesterol coming down and the blood pressure coming down. So that's what happens. You know, we don't need to have them go get another expensive test to see what the plaquing looks like. Because again, the other readings are when that blood pressure, cholesterol start coming down, we know it's reversing that process. So it's very cool.
Gotcha. What do you now, thoughts?
For some people,
go ahead.
Sorry, yeah. So for some people, though, I'm not saying that all people with cardiovascular disease, it's caused by high blood sugar, right? Because lots of people have heart disease that don't have diabetes, right? So it's other things causing it, from too much cholesterol in their diet, et cetera, right? But the majority, I'm going to say 65, 70% of our diabetic patients, they're also taking blood pressure, cholesterol meds. And they get put on those after they get diagnosed with their diabetes. That's when you know there's a direct correlation to it. Okay, so it's pretty cool when they get off of all of those meds. It's, man, it's awesome.
Yeah, I do think avoiding those meds are probably good. I think that some of that stuff is dished out just way too quickly. And you know,
100%.
Incentive structure.
And with what I just said too is a lot of our patients, right, when they get diagnosed with diabetes, they don't even have high blood pressure, high cholesterol yet. But their doctor will prescribe those pills right away saying, hey, I know you don't have it yet, but because you're diabetic, it's going to happen.
Let's have
you take these meds now as a preventative. That's the way they do, which is very strange.
Well, if that's the cause, then if the blood sugar is the cause, how are there people that have high cholesterol that don't have high blood sugar?
No, I didn't say that.
Remember, I know you didn't say that, but those exist, right?
So, I'm saying that there are people that have cardiovascular disease that are not diabetic. So it's caused by just eating too much cholesterol, fried foods, etc. Has nothing to do with the high blood sugar. That's why it's not a direct correlation.
But what I'm saying is cholesterol that's used to patch up those walls made from the liver and not the dietary cholesterol?
Well, it's both. I mean, it can be from both, right?
I don't know. It's not just, I thought that. It wasn't from diet. I mean, I thought that they used to say that, and I thought even the American Heart Association, I think, came out and said we can't claim that dietary cholesterol leads to that anymore, and that it's the cholesterol, like your body, it's like your body's response, like you said, like it's trying to fix something.
Right, but I get it. That makes sense to me when a diabetic develops that, right, because of the physiology I said. But for people that don't have high blood sugar and they still have high cholesterol and develop high blood pressure, that's coming 100% from dietary issues, you know? So that's why there's a different correlation there. That's why, again, we don't have a reverse your heart disease program, you know, even though it could be similar. There's other people out there that kind of do that sort of thing with how to change your diet to help your high blood pressure and cholesterol. I'm just trying to give the correlation that we see with diabetics, how they also develop cardiovascular disease. And then we reverse that, all of a sudden the blood pressure, cholesterol comes down. So,
gotcha. Yeah. Jeffrey, I appreciate you. I hope that it's not coming off like I'm combative. I have a lot of questions.
Oh, gosh,
I'm super
no.
curious. I know
no,
it could sound
it,
like my tone like I'm fighting, but I'm really trying to understand this stuff. And I've heard so many different takes, and I really don't know what's true. And I think everybody's probably a good bit right, and maybe not all the way right. And I don't, and I'm trying to like work through it. What's your take, your opinion, or do you have any insights on the role that fats and dietary fats play on like diabetes?
Well, again, depends on the fat, right? Just like it depends on the glucose, how it comes in. So there's good sources of fat, like essential fatty acids, you know, stuff that you see in nuts, olive oil, you know, those are good sources, coconuts oil, those are good sources of fat versus the stuff that's on French fries and in a lot of fried foods, et cetera. So there's different types. So the good fats, 100% good. That helps reverse insulin resistance.
So wait, what do you consider the good fats? You said coconut oil.
Yeah, coconut oil, olive oil. You know, again, essential fatty acids that you can get supplements. Actually, in part of our supplements are the essential fatty acids that come from that.
Like those are omega-3s?
Yeah, the omega-3s. Yep. So those are the good kind. The bad kind, again, is like most people know, the fried foods, the canola oils, some of the vegetable oils, you know.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to ask, because I know seed oils are a big, I guess, like topic of discussion now. And I mean, there's people say they're the total enemy and the root of a lot of the issues that we have. And some people think they're no big deal. Some people even think they're good because they could lower cholesterol, which I guess in theory they can maybe. But but like I wonder, because like you mentioned the bad fats, and I have heard people discuss how there's mechanisms where these bad fats disrupt our ability to utilize glucose at the source, like within the mitochondria, to make energy.
And that's one of the reasons why the bad fats are bad.
So that's why when I hear someone say like, and I wonder, especially because I've been diving into like sugar more the last few years, I wonder how much sugar, dietary sugar, gets a bad name when it's often attached to a really crappy inflammatory fat that also has a direct inhibition of glucose oxidation. So like, for instance, if somebody says if a donut is bad because it's sugar, well, donut is likely 50% polyunsaturated fat. Mm-hmm. Fat.
Yeah.
And so, there's sugar in it, but that might not be the problem. Like, our body does understand sugar. It utilizes it to make energy. Arguably, it's its favorite source to make energy in most cells most of the time. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if it's more like it's not so much the sugar, the overall carbohydrate. It's just that you're not utilizing it well. And what are the things that are disrupting or dysregulating your ability to utilize it? And I wonder, well, maybe some of these fats are the issue, or maybe it's the stress of hating your job, or the stress of, like you said, the truck driver that has a dysregulated like circadian rhythm. Like, stress could come in so many different forms, and maybe any one of them could just make you bad at using sugar, which sets off stress hormones that are liberating body fat, they're liberating proteins to make sugar to try to fix the problem, and blood sugar raises. Like, I remember my father was he was like 4 days into a fast, essentially, and went to the emergency room, and he had high blood sugar, like way high. It was like 160. A guy that usually averages like 100, 110. Wasn't from dietary stuff. Now, granted, that was an acute stress. So like you said, it'll raise it, just like exercise will raise it. But like, a lot of people are just chronically stressed, and how much of chronic stress or these fats, which have completely integrated into our whole food system. Like, you can't go to a restaurant without avoiding these bad fats. Like, how do we tease out what's contributing? Because like you mentioned, dairy's bad, but people have been eating dairy a long time without diabetes. Hello, it's Les here. I want to offer my sincere gratitude to you for tuning in. I know there are seemingly infinite options to place your attention these days, and I am humbled that you chose to spend this time with me. I also want to let you know that I am opening up a few more online private coaching sessions. I've been coaching clients for over 17 years,
and I've always found it very rewarding to guide someone through a transformational phase of their life. If you would like to play a larger role in your sense of well-being, feel better in your body, and support your own healing or growth journey, please check out my services at themindfulmovement.com/less to see if we would be a good fit.
I mean, again, Matt, it's like, it's not just one thing. It's more complicated than that. And that's why with our program, we eliminate as much of the things that can be contributing to it as possible to get that person to reverse this disease in, you know, less than 7 months. And sometimes these people have been diabetic for 17, 20 years. We reverse it in less than half a year, you know, and to do that, you've got to like hit it from all angles. Now, once it's reversed, then yeah, we say, hey, bring a little bit of dairy back in. Bring a little bit of this back in and so see how happens, your blood sugar goes.
What happens right? When you do that? Does the blood sugar back up? Like, that's what I'm interested
in. It will
when
go back up. But
when
again,
I hear reversal, I'm thinking you're fixing the problem and not just lowering that blood mark.
Yeah. When they reverse it, they cannot go back to the same diet they had before they started our program. Otherwise, it will all come back again. Whether 3 months, 5 months, 6 months, it's all going to come back. Now, if they would do a little bit of it, it's not going to trigger that insulin resistance again because it was triggered because of overwhelming their body with too much glucose from the sodas, the candy, the carbs, the bad carbs, you know, the dairy, etc. All these things bombarding it. So you have to eliminate all of those things that are contributing to it. And in our course, in our program, all the bad fats are eliminated. So that's all part of it. So yeah, but I get it. To your point, is it for some people, is it the bad carbs that's doing it? Or is it the bad fats not letting the body utilize it? Or is it a combination? Because most people, if they're eating the bad fats, they're also eating other bad stuff too. It's not just the bad fats. So let's get real on that, right? They're eating the dairy, they're eating the bad carbs and the bad fats. So it's from all angles, right? So if we just got rid of the bad fats and they still ate a ton of the bad carbs and a ton of dairy, they're still going to become insulin resistant. Maybe it takes a little bit longer for that to happen, but it's still going to happen. Okay, it's just physiology, man. You can't keep bombarding
your body. Wasn't
dairy
like such a big part of our collective diet up until, like, really for a long, long time? Like, long before, like, when did diabetes really uptick?
Well, it's really been in the last 20 years how it's really gotten worse.
Yeah, but like,
and again,
that's
it's
exactly.
All because of sedentary. Like, again, I'm 61 years old. When I was a kid, oh my gosh, man, talk about a crappy diet. My parents were just knuckleheads, right? I had sugar, sodas all day long. One of our desserts is my mom would literally put icing sugar in a bowl with water, stir it up, and give it to my brother and I. We'd be eating straight icing sugar. I didn't get diabetes, but guess what? I was outside playing, probably burning off 10,000 calories a day. So you can have bad habits when you're burning off that many calories and not become diabetic.
Yeah, and when you're young,
the example is the football players, right? Yeah, those guys, when they stop playing, look how much weight those guys gain because now they're not burnt. They still eat the same amount of calories, but they're not burning off 12,000 calories a day. It doesn't take very long. And those guys are in really bad shape. So that's why it's been that last 20 years when we became more computer bound. Everyone's sitting on their ass, you know, excuse my French, 16 hours a day, and they're on their phones. You know, kids, I mean, my wife and I laugh about this. We drive around neighborhoods. It's like there's a kid apocalypse. Like, where are the kids outside playing in the yard and climbing trees and playing hide and seek? Like, they're all on their phones.
Yeah, when we were young, we had one toy. It was called Outside. And if you were lucky, you had a bike.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's not happening anymore. So, and again, I don't see it changing very much, at least in my lifetime, because diabetes is getting higher every single year because we're getting more and more sedentary, you know, and it's sad. And I see these kids now. We're seeing kids that are 15 years old, 12 years old that are type 2 diabetic.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because they're obese because their parents were feeding them Happy Meals 5 days a week, you know, like Trix cereal, Captain Crunch for breakfast, you know, it's like pizza for lunch, sodas, and they're not exercising at all. And like, oh my gosh, they became diabetic at 12, 15. What did you think was going to happen? Right? I mean, you can't do that. But that's what's happening right now. And it's very, very sad. So
it is. Yeah. And when you're young, what's like, you can compensate. Like you said, you could, like, I had a bad diet too. And I didn't get diabetes like you did. And like, not that you did, like that you also, like, you had a bad diet, standard American diet, living on crap, didn't get diabetes because we were active. And part of that is when you're young, you can compensate for a lot of bad habits, and you can't when you're older.
But if I would have kept eating that way for 40 years, 100% I'd be a diabetic. You know, so now I can't do that, right?
See, I don't know. I eat so much sugar right now, Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. And I eat so much dairy. Like, this is my go-to snack.
And how old are you right now?
I'm 48 and a half.
Okay.
And I used to be low carb. I did stints in keto. And but I was low carb for a long time. And I think it did a lot of good things for some things. And I think it did some not so good things for some.
And how much do you exercise?
A lot. I own a gym. Exercise is a huge part of my life.
Okay, so I mean, you're proving my point, right?
With a lot of intensity. I try to stay moving.
Okay, well, that's my point. See, you're doing things that the average
right. But this is where I'm getting.
Your age exercise as much as you. No. But
this is where this is where my brain goes though. 20 years ago, you say it. You have the uptick in type 2, right? And I think it started increasing before that. But you're right. Like over the last couple of decades, it's really getting crazy. And there used to never be kids that had it. So yep. Something's obviously happening.
Yep.
But people have been eating dairy for like so long. So I'm like, it can't be the sugar and the dairy.
Again, you're making it come down to one thing. It's not just the dairy. It's the dairy and the soda and all the breads and pasta and rice and it's all of it. Right?
But what if so it's not like, what if it's that? Just the sedentariness or the fats? Like, that's the thing. Like, I wonder how much, people that are eating dairy and having a lot of carbohydrate in their diet, if they just walked a few times, you know, I don't know, a few miles a day, like, that would take care of it. Like, I don't know what the minimum effective dose of exercise is to avoid diabetes. But when I hear you make an intervention, the blood sugar goes down, the A1C goes down, that all sounds good. But if it means you can't eat a glass of milk without it going back up and being a problem, I feel like there's something still going on that you're not utilizing that energy. And I don't want to blame the sugar on it because people have been eating sugar for a long time. In fact, there's studies out there. And there's a study where a guy like reversed diabetes with like rice.
Okay. I need to see that study.
Yeah. Well, look it up. It's on PubMed. You can look it up.
But like, my point is, again, it's
you because he was in a it was in a there wasn't a caloric like surplus, but uh-huh. They basically gave I think somebody did it same with potatoes too. Like,
okay, but again, we got to look at all factors. When I hear something get thrown out like that, okay, give me more details. How old was the person?
Yeah,
what else
know.
Did they do? How did they exercise, et cetera? There's a lot of things that I need to see to fill in the gaps on that. All I can say is, man, that we have the patient that come to see us, our average age is 65, right? So that means half of them are older than 65, half are younger. Average is 65. They've been a diabetic for at least 5 years, right? And they're taking 6 or 7 medications. Okay, so this is not someone who's pre-diabetic where, yeah, maybe if you just exercise more, you're going to get rid of the pre-diabetes is easy. Stop eating a little bit of the carbs and walk through, you know, 5 days
a week. But see,
there
you did it again. That's why I'm fighting back.
Okay,
but
my point
you're blaming
is that
carb.
That's not the person that we're dealing
with. I
think
we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
No. We're dealing with a diabetic who's more severe. And for someone who's taking 5 or 6 medications, cardiovascular problems, right, they've been a diabetic for 5 years or more, just walking 30 minutes a day is not going to reverse it. It's not enough. We got to hit it from all angles. Once it's reversed, that's when we say, okay, add a little bit of dairy back. Let's see what happens to your blood sugar. Add a little bit of this and see what happens. But don't go back to what you were doing before you met us. It's going to come back again. So that's where, again, I'm not saying you cannot ever eat a piece of pizza for the rest of your life if you do our program or have a glass of milk. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying to reverse it when you're that severe and do it within 3 to 7 months, you can't screw around. Why mess around? Unless, well, let's just do a little bit. Now, next thing you know, it's a year goes by and nothing's happened. So that's why the plan we figured out is how do we get this thing reversed as quick as possible? And then once it's reversed, what can that person bring back into their diet and not have the blood sugar go back up again, knowing that they can't go back to the same lifestyle they had before? So that's what we deal with. Once they graduate, that's what we deal with the patient. Okay, let's try this now. And we say you can have a cheat day 1 day a week when you're done, right, and see how that goes. And if the blood sugar's not going high, okay, let's try have a cheat day twice a week, okay, and see how that goes. So everyone's different on that. Some people say, I don't want to cheat anymore. I'm used to this diet now. I love it. I'm cool with it. It's not that restrictive. I don't want to go back at all. And others like, yeah, they want to kind of push the envelope again and see how much they can go back to their old habits without it causing a blood sugar spike. So that's why we do. So again,
we're in a very the same thing and expect something different. Yeah, I have to applaud you. You're being a really good sport. I feel like I'm winning the award of most obnoxious podcast host today.
100% not, man. I love this. You're basically challenging me more to kind of explain, which I don't have to do a lot of the times, which is great. Because, you know, we have to, again, you can imagine the average patient we have, it's like 99.9% of them don't have your knowledge. So they just say, what do I got to do to get rid of this freaking thing? I'm like, here's what you do. So we almost have to dumb it down a bit, right? And say, just do this. It's going to work, you know, versus get into the biochemistry and the physiology of it. But man, I can geek out on this stuff because I love it, right?
And it's a good tool. Like, you got to have different tools. Like, I can nerd out on things. And like in the gym, people will come in and some people just like, they don't want to learn anything and they just want to like be told what to do. And I'm like, I'm not the right guy for you. Yeah. Find a different trainer. Like I like teaching, like this is why we do this. This is what we're doing. This is how we do it because of why we're doing it. And so it's, like you know,
most people just want to know what time it is. They don't want to know how to build the watch. Yeah. Right?
And that's one of the problems. Like that's why pills work so well. Just give me the pill.
Yes, exactly. Like,
I have parents that will do anything a doctor will tell them to do as long as it's just take a pill.
Exactly. I mean, I got to stop eating this. Screw that. Right. That's why, again, for 100 people that get access to our program, diabetics, we might get 20% of them that want to do it. Because the other 80%, no way. I'm not giving that up. I'll just take my meds and take my chances. I'm like, okay. And they'll be sitting there in a wheelchair with two amputated feet, and they still don't want to change their diet. I mean, you can't help someone like that, right? I mean, we're going after that slice of the population that says, yeah, I'm sick of these freaking meds. I don't like how they make me feel. I got low sex drive. I'm sleeping bad. I'm getting neuropathy in my feet. I'm afraid of an amputation. I'm getting blurred vision. I don't want to go blind. My doctor said I got stage 4 kidney failure. I don't want to go on dialysis. I've already had high blood pressure. I don't want to have a heart attack or a stroke. And they're like, okay, enough is enough. I need to change. And that's the people that do really well with us. You know, the people that want to take the Ozempic and the GLP-1s and do gastric bypass and lap bands, those shortcut people, they're not good people for us because they're not going to want to change your lifestyle. So they won't even do it.
Well, it's good to know like who your customer is, I guess. Jeffrey, as someone that is the CEO of a company that literally guarantees reversing diabetes, do you mind discussing a little bit of like your own kind of regimen? You said you're how old?
Yeah, 61.
You look like pretty healthy 61-year-old. Like, how do you approach you know, your sense of general well-being when you're trying to, you know, manage the minutes of your day?
Yeah. So again, for me, I'm not a fanatic, you know, as far as giving up all these things, right? So again, I'm one of those guys, kind of like you're talking about. I can have some carbs, some pasta once in a while. And it's not going to freak out my system because I'm not doing it every day, 3 times a day with all this other stuff, right? Plus, I exercise 5 days a week in the gym. My wife and I do that. Right. So that kind of burns off some of that stuff. And I'll have ice cream a couple times a month, but I don't drink soda at all. I don't drink caffeine, very little dairy products, you know, very little bad carbs. My diet's mainly fruits, vegetables, and meats. And for me, I do an intermittent fast every day. I've been doing that for the last 5 years. So I'll typically have a smoothie for lunch, which is a super greens that I have, like 2 scoops of that. And also have some protein in there. So it's about 80 grams of protein with water. And that's my lunch.
80 grams in a green smoothie.
Yeah. So with a green smoothie, and it's big. It's like it's in like a big thing like this.
That's a lot of protein in a smoothie.
Yeah. And then for dinner, I'll have, you know, some kind of steak or chicken or something else, sometimes some pasta. That's it. I don't eat again until noon. So I have no breakfast. And that's what I do. And I'm working out 5 days a week, sleep about 7-8 hours a night. And it works great for me.
Can I ask you what do you focus on in the workouts?
Yeah, so for me, it's definitely, I do a little bit of cardio, about 10 minutes, like on a Stairmaster or an elliptical machine. But then I do 5 days a week, I do 1 upper body per day. So 1 day it's bicep, 1 day tricep, 1 day chest, 1 day shoulder, 1 day back. But all 5 days I do something with legs. right? So either one day leg extension, leg curl, squats, etc. So to keep my legs strong as I'm getting older.
Have you?
So that's kind of how I do it. So I'm not doing like, you know, biceps and triceps on the same day. So I just do that one body part per week. And that works out really well for me to keep me lean, still keep me strong. I'm 6'2", 210 pounds. Been like that for about 6 years now. Body fat's about 18%.
That sounds pretty healthy, man.
Yeah, so it's not, I don't take any medications. I don't smoke. I do drink red wine. That's my vice is red wine.
Do you take that supplement that your company makes?
Yeah.
You do? Is that like a daily
I take supplements. Well, I don't take these. I'm sorry. Okay. The supplements I take is in the green drink that I take.
Gotcha.
That's got all the vitamins and minerals in there. So I don't take this because there's things in here that I don't need to take. Again, we don't recommend people take these every day the rest of their life. It's just going through the program.
Gotcha.
Once they're done, then we recommend some kind of a maintenance, but it's a lot less than that.
Do you think there's a certain genre of exercise or style that is more supportive to focus on when someone's trying to reverse diabetes?
Well, I mean, the resistance training, it's obviously going to use, you know, more glucose in your body because it puts a little bit more of a stress on the body. But again, talking about compliance, average age 65, getting those people to just walk 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week is like pulling teeth. If we also said, oh, now you got to go to a gym and do these resistance training, very, very hard for that, for compliance on that. So luckily for us, that they don't have to do that to still reverse it. Now, just eating the right way, taking the supplements and a little bit of walking is enough to get the blood sugar down and reverse it. But people that do want to do the resistance training, it helps for sure.
Yeah, I think walking is really underrated. And I read some studies around post-meal walks, how just like that really light activation of your large leg muscles.
Yeah.
I guess there's something called, I hope I don't botch this. It's like non-glucose dependent. Non-insulin dependent glucose uptake. So it's like some of the glucose transporters can take glucose in without the need for insulin to kind of opening the door.
Got it.
I don't know if it's driven by the muscular contraction or the increased blood flow in the muscle that we get from like repetitive thing. But the other thing about walking too, it's such a low level. You're not getting into that glycolytic state where the body's more likely to ferment sugar.
Exactly.
To make energy and using these like in case emergency break glass metabolic systems that have problems with them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I really think this probably in my opinion, and I have no proof to show this, that walking might be the number one thing to do. I don't know how much you need. And I think there's probably more value doing it around mealtime. But it's great that is so effective because it is the most accessible for most people.
Exactly. Yeah, it's easy to do. And again, to your point on the exercise, that we tell this to people too, because I'll have patients, I exercise 2 hours a day, I do an hour on the treadmill, blah, 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 and my blood sugar's not coming down. I'm like, well, you're exercising too intensely for your body. You're causing a cortisol reaction because it's such a stress, and that's what's keeping the blood sugar high. So we tell them, here's how you figure it out. Take your blood sugar before you exercise, right? And then after you exercise, wait about an hour and take it again. And if your blood sugar is lower, right, that's good. That means your body utilized some of the extra glucose, and that's what your body wants to do. But if your blood sugar is higher, then you know that you exercise a little bit too strenuously for your body. So just kind of back it off a bit. Like maybe only 10 minutes on the treadmill versus an hour, you know, something like that. And they kind of keep testing to see what is that threshold for that person to where now the exercise is actually bringing the blood sugar down versus making it go up.
Yeah.
So it's pretty
easy to
measure.
And I think that's a common thing. Like even with younger, healthier people, you know, that are, I don't know, like fitness minded. Like I enjoy fitness. I have to modulate my intensity because I've made the mistake hundreds of times of doing too much, not enough days off. And then it'll show up in like insomnia or some kind of stress thing. But I got to tell you, to me, the most anti-stress material that exists that helps is sugar. Because I think sugar directly suppresses the stress hormones. Because I think their role, in many cases, are there to when there's not enough sugar to help you make sugar or help you at least meet the demand of energy with supplying sources of energy, one of which is the sugar that we make when we don't get enough.
Yeah, again, it comes down to the amount, right? If you do that once in a while, great. But if it's everyday thing, unless they're exercising like you know, more than the average person every day, it's going to eventually catch up with you. It's just physiology, man. It's like smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day for 20 years. What do you think is going to happen to your lungs, right? It's just physiology. You keep eating all this crap and bombarding your body with sugar from all these angles, right? Like we mentioned, eventually your body's going to become insulin resistant. It's just physiology. It's a predictable thing, which is good because then you reverse that. It's predictable. It's going to get better. And that's what's really cool about it. So
that's the part I would disagree with. I think that there are people that eat a lot of sugar for a long time. I think that it would be like drinking water and saying, if you drink too much water, you're going to lose the ability to absorb water.
Yeah, it's not a fair comparison at all. Not at all. So one thing's good, one thing's bad. Again, when you talk about sugar, again, there's just too much of it will bombard the system. And I will argue anybody who's in their 60s, who's eaten a lot of sugar every day for 20, 30 years, if they're not pre-diabetic or close to being diabetic, then that's a very rare thing that's happened. There's got to be other factors.
Well, I agree. A lot. I think it's rare because I think most people eat a lot of other crap too. Like, I really do think these seed oils are a real problem. And I do think they are affecting people's ability to manage sugar. So I think if you do have a lot of canola oil and stuff and a lot of sugar, you're going to have a problem. I just don't think it's inherently the sugar. I think our body, I don't think it even makes sense that our body that loves this ingredient to make energy would turn on itself because you have an abundance of it.
Again, it's the type of sugar and hitting it from too many angles. Like I said, your body needs the sugar. And when people do our program, again, they're coming in a very bad advanced stage. Right, we're not talking about a pre-diabetic who, yeah,
I get
you can
it.
Have a
yeah,
little
we
bit
don't. And we're going in a circle now. I think there's going to be something. It's not that I disagree. It's that I don't know, and I'm not convinced. but I think it's great. Like what you're doing and what you've devoted to, it sounds great. The fact that you offer a refund is very telling. I think it's important that there's a lot of tools out there, and even if it is for some people, take the pill from the doc. Even though, like, I don't recommend it, and I hate. I've seen so many loved ones kind of go down that path. I think it's great in this day and age that we have different options. And it sounds like you're doing really good work providing one of those options. So I applaud you for it. And again, applaud you for putting up with me today. This is something that's like stirs in my mind a lot that I try to figure out. And I am, there's like a devil's advocate naturally in me. So I'm always like questioning about this stuff. So I appreciate you being a good sport with that. And for people that want to learn more about the Diabetes Reversal Group and if it's a good fit for them, where should they go, Jeffrey?
Yeah, just go to our website. It's reverseyourdiabetes.com. And you can register there for one of our free webinars. No obligation. Check it out. See if it sounds like a good thing for you. That's where they go, reverseyourdiabetes.com.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you reaching out. And, Doc, I appreciate you, offering your time and enjoyed the conversation. And for the listeners, always grateful for your listening. If you are dealing with a high blood sugar situation or you know someone, please share this. And if you have something to share about your experience with the Diabetes Reversal Group, we'd love to hear it in the comments section or anything about what we talked about today. Appreciate it. I hope everybody out there has a great day.
Thanks, man.